thing. I'm going to ask you some questions, and the tape will be transcribed.
Yes.
It goes into the archives of the University of Pennsylvania Center for History of Chemistry, but what you will have complete control over the transcript. In other words, we'll have it transcribed and send you the transcript.
Yes.
And then you can make all the changes and whatever.
I shall not make many changes.
Not many changes. Well, that's good. But
if I find very bad errors.
Yeah, sometimes, yes. And now let's see if your voice carries enough and if I have that adjusted well enough. Could you say a few words, maybe?
Something more than I said before?
Well, no, I guess it's all right. We'll just listen to it now. This is Tonya Koppel interviewing Professor Thaddäus Reichstein at his home in Basel, Switzerland on April 22, 1905. Professor Reichstein, if you don't mind, I would like to ask you a few questions about your life first and your early life. You were born in 1897 in, I hope I pronounced this right,
Lotslawek
in Poland.
Yes.
And in 1905, when you were 8 years old, your parents emigrated to Germany?
No, my parents emigrated to Switzerland. It's to say that my father had his business in Kiev, in Russia.
Yes.
And the family went to Poland where the parents of my mother and my father came from for summer holiday to Poland on the country.
I see.
And I was born there.
I see.
And then when I was in 1905, they immigrated to Switzerland. But the family was too big, and so they left me in Germany in a school for 2 years. Until he could buy a house in Zurich, and then I could come also.
So you were in Jena?
In Jena,
in Germany?
Yes,
in a boarding school?
Yes, 2 years.
What grades did you go through?
No grades.
No grades?
When I was there, I was seven years old.
Yes, and you didn't go to, didn't have any formal schooling yet?
No. That's just a primary school.
Yeah, but you went primary school grade 1, 2, 3. No, it was just.
There were no.
But you did get some schooling in German.
Yes.
I see.
For these 2 years.
For 2 years.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it. Why did you not like it?
No, it was kind of military attitude and. Mm-hmm. Which was completely foreign to me.
Yes.
I did like 2-3 boys who were also there, but mm-hmm. That's all. I didn't like the teachers, and I didn't like the other boys.
Uh-huh. So you were glad to go to Switzerland?
Yes, very glad, yes.
You went to Switzerland in 1908, to Zurich?
To
1907.
I joined the family in Zurich.
In Zurich?
Where my father just bought a house there.
Yeah, well, your father had his own office in Kiev.
In Kiev, or, yes.
And then
he lived about a quarter of a year in Zurich, and a quarter of a year he went to Kiev.
Oh, I see, I see.
Look after his businesses.
So he was a chemical engineer, was he?
Yes.
What was his name?
Reichstein.
Yes, but his first
name? Isidor
Reichstein. I see. And so he continued his business in Zurich?
Till the war.
Yeah, what did he do?
He made equipment for sugar industry.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting.
There was sugar industry in this part of Russia, very much, and factories who produce sugar from the beetle, from sugar beetle. And he made the machine. He sold the machines and I didn't know exactly what I was too small and this time. I haven't seen. He had just an office in Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
He made most things by correspondence, and he went to the factories.
I see that your early work was connected with sugars. Was there any influence?
No.
It has nothing to do with your father's business. But your father, being a chemist, must have had a certain influence on your decision study chemistry?
No.
Not either?
No. That was quite chance. Until I think you had to decide when you enter the ETH Zurich, which department you would. I wanted to be engineer.
Yes.
And only 3 days ago, before I had to decide the final decision, the best friend in my class, he said he is going to study chemistry. And then I suddenly thought, I had never thought about to study chemistry, because I didn't think that it's something really worse to study, because I knew chemistry quite well. I did a lot of chemistry on my own in the cellar in our house. I made analysis and all kind of experiments. And when I started studying, I knew much more than all the rest.
Oh, yes.
Just by practice.
Yes, you were self-taught in a way.
By practicing.
But
and then afterwards I liked it.
You liked it.
And we had a very good teacher in the school in Zurich for chemistry. And he also influenced many of the boys to study chemistry afterwards.
What was the name of that school?
At this time it was called Industrieschule.
Uh-huh.
Now it's called Oberrealschule. That's just the type of gymnasium without Latin.
Yes, it's
didn't
more
like old languages of this time. Afterwards I was sorry, we didn't learn any Latin. But
it's more mathematically oriented.
More mathematics and physics and natural science and all this. And I was always was very easy for me.
Mm-hmm. And before you went to the Oberrealschule, you had some schooling here, but mainly private schooling.
Private at home. At home.
I see. And were your parents involved in this?
My father gave us mathematics.
Uh-huh. And your
and
mother? Did
no,
she?
No, she
no,
didn't.
She did not.
But no, also a real teacher. He gave some lessons in German, and we learned French, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember how, but I had no trouble with French, because one had to speak it, and I had trouble with English, because I didn't learn it, and at this time it was not yet very, very popular here, and the English teacher, he wanted to throw me out of school, but he didn't succeed, because when I entered the school in the Oberrealschule in Zurich about 2.5 years too late, nearly 3 years too late. And I had to prepare everything myself. And that was quite easy, except for English, because they had already 3 years of English, and I had to learn it on myself within 3 months. I didn't succeed.
That's difficult.
When I entered the school that was in spring 1914. So I realized that I don't understand what he's talking, and he didn't like me and I didn't like him, and he wanted to throw me out of school because of my completely ignorance of English. So I went to the rector and I told him, I know my English is very poor because I had no time to make it, but I will go to England in the summer holidays and will try to learn just conversation. So he agreed, and then he couldn't do anything. And I went to England and stayed there, and when I was there, the war broke out.
Yes.
And I couldn't return.
Oh, no.
So I had to stay till Christmas.
Uh-huh.
On Christmas, suddenly you could pass by France again.
Mm-hmm.
In 14. And so I came back in just for the new year, and my English was not really good, but I could understand the people talking, everything, and I could also talk a little, so this teacher couldn't throw me out anymore.
So he accepted it.
He was not very friendly, and
mm-hmm.
I tried to make nonsense as much as I could to make him angry.
Well, that's boys.
I was on very good terms and with all the other teachers.
Yes.
So they stayed in school like all the others.
But you were a real Swiss by then. I mean,
yes,
coming to this country
Swiss
so early.
Yes, I became Swiss in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
Naturalized.
And you spoke Swiss German.
Yes, we could speak
fluently, so there was no problem.
No, not much problem. No.
So
my parents did not become Swiss.
Oh, they did not.
Only for the
we
were five boys.
Yes, yes.
And they made the five boys with Swiss nationality, and because my parents said yes, to live half of his time in Russia and half of it here, so it's not, and he cannot speak Swiss German, and
mm-hmm.
But afterwards we were sorry that he didn't make it also, because he was unable to return anymore to Russia.
Yes, I
when
see.
When war
yeah,
broke out and then the revolution came,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Soon, it was quite impossible, and he lost everything.
In Russia,
and he had most of his values he had in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So he lost everything, and he couldn't work anymore here, couldn't find any work. So my mother had to lend, rooms in the house.
Oh, yes, let rooms take,
yes,
boarders.
Yes, take boarders.
Yes.
And to earn something, and
uh-huh.
we had to sell always piece of land.
Oh.
The land was quite big.
Yes, yes.
It was fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And, so they managed to bring it through
mm-hmm.
all five. I was already after the war, when the financial situation was the worst, I could start to earn myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you went.
I had always luck with earning money. I didn't make any jumps, but it came from a loan.
Yes, yes. So you went to the ETH, Swiss Federal Institute of Technology.
Studied chemistry, and at the same time I could find a job in a factory just to work one day.
Uh-huh.
And this one day I earned sufficient for the rest of the week.
Uh-huh.
And to pay my fees for the ETH, mm-hmm. and everything.
And you went into the chemical engineering department.
Yes.
And what did you take? Were there any? Was the curriculum, was it the same as it is now, or as it used to be?
More or less the same.
More or less.
The same. Yes. It was just the first of course mathematics and physics and physical chemistry and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the afternoon we had to work in the laboratory to make analysis and analytical chemistry, and then afterwards these modern things atomic structures, they were not existent yet.
No,
nobody
not.
Knew anything about it. There were some special lectures which I went given by physicists on Bohr's theory and on that just came up. It was quite new.
Yes, in 1916 you started. So
yes, it was quite new.
And it was taught, brand new.
It was not officially. You could go there.
Yes,
but not, it
an,
was
an
not,
elective.
Elective.
We would call it Freifach.
Yes, a very young man. Spoke about this. He's long dead now.
Oh yes. But, you don't remember his name, or?
Yes, Wolfke.
Wolfke.
Wolfke was his name. He's not very well known.
Mm-hmm.
There were others later who were, of course, much better known in the physics department.
Who were they? Do you remember?
Einstein was one.
Oh, Einstein, of course,
and,
yeah.
Weil.
Wolfgang Pauli there?
Wolfgang Pauli, yes, that was much later.
Much later, yes.
And then came in the physics department, they came to Bay.
Yes.
And when I studied chemistry, the physics department was in an extremely poor state. The male representative, he was mentally ill, and they hadn't the possibility to put him out. They had no successor, and they had to wait until he dies.
What was his name?
Schweitzer. He's completely unknown.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on magnetism. And perhaps his work, when he was young, was quite good, but he had no facilities to teach, and he was ill, really ill. And afterwards, Debye came with Scherer, and then physics started, and they attracted many good people, among them also Pauli.
Yes.
And also there was also the Picard,
yes,
probably.
The deep sea diver, is that? I mean,
yes,
the Babiska.
Hemisphere.
Balloons. Uh huh.
He went up to, with his balloons, up to 40 kilometers.
Uh huh.
It was the highest point which could be reached at this time. There were no rockets yet.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what was the chemistry department like?
The chemistry department was quite good. My chief was Staudinger, Hermann Staudinger, who worked on polymers. At this time he was the only one who believed that the polymers like proteins and caoutchouc and so are really big molecules held together by coordinated bonds. And others, the general view was that there were just associations of small molecules. That means that the formula of cellulose would be C6 and hold together by some unknown forces, which they called coordination complexes or something. And Staudinger, he was quite eigenwillig.
Mm-hmm. Independent.
He was possessed by idea.
Yes.
And he didn't think on everything else than on his polymers. Mm-hmm. And he was right. And I was quite sure that he is right. But I didn't like the methods which he used to repeat on every lecture which he gave. Officially, he repeated the same things, mm-hmm. but that was necessary, of course. Mm-hmm. He had to defend his ideas.
Yeah. How did he want to prove it? Experimentally?
He did prove it experimentally, with quite reasonable methods, which even afterwards were accepted by the physicists.
What did he
use? He used
molecular weight determinations.
Molecular weight determinations were impossible, and they don't work on these things for a quite simple reason, because these molecules are not stable. They can move around like a snake, and therefore they behave as if they were smaller parts, smaller bits. But I don't find the correct words for it. He developed quite good methods, mm-hmm. but there were not such methods which the physicists like. And some of the physicists, for instance, the Röntgen diagrams of cellulose. They gave a repetition unit of C12.
Mm-hmm.
So very many of the chemists accepted that as a proof that cellulose is just C12. Mm-hmm. It's just a double of glucose.
Yes, yes.
And that was a jump which is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Cellulose, it's built of such units, but they are held together by real covalent bonds.
Yes, yes.
And that's what Staudinger mm-hmm. always propagated, mm-hmm. and which turned out finally to be correct. And the physicists admitted that this, but only about 10 or 20 years later, that these lines in the Röntgen diagrams, which give you a unit of C12 mm-hmm. means something else.
Mm-hmm.
It is a unit which repeats itself.
Yes, yes.
But these two units are held together by a real covalent bond.
Yes, yes.
And that's what Staudinger propagated. He was quite right.
Mm-hmm. And you then?
I didn't work on this.
You'd never worked on
it? I didn't like his methods. Because he was it's a kind of brutal chemistry. He liked everything with much make noise and burst and give explosions. These are the things which he liked. And when he came to the laboratory,
yes,
perhaps twice a year to work there himself for mm-hmm. 2 hours. Afterwards, it was just everything full of broken glass and...
That sounds awful. But how could he only work twice a year? He had his own laboratory, of course.
He had many assistants.
Oh, he worked in the student laboratory twice a year.
No, he came to the... He came,
to your,
no, in the laboratory, in his uh-huh. own laboratory, where normally two assistants were working. They knew how to work.
And he didn't work himself there.
When he worked himself, everything
exploded.
Yes, because he only liked such reactions which explode,
yeah.
which give noise. And when he gave his lectures were very good.
Mm-hmm.
But the maximum was always when he could give the lectures on trinitrobenzene. trinitrotoluene.
Toluene.
That's an explosive.
TNT.
And yeah. He put a little separatory funnel at the ceiling with nitroglycerin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the drop was coming down every 20 seconds on a blech.
On a sheet.
Metal sheet. Which was heated.
From below. Yes.
And when the heat was low, then the drop came down and made a little noise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the hotter it became, the more
noise
it gave. And at a certain temperature, I can't remember which one, it was about 450 or 500 degrees, it makes a terrible noise, like a gun shoot, every drop.
Yes.
And then when you heat it still more to make it red,
hot,
then it goes down again.
I see.
The noise is lower.
That's a very interesting.
His mood went exactly in the same rhythm.
Yes.
He said, "Now listen."
Mm-hmm.
And he standed so, and then he came up. And when the thing was on its maximum, he was quite
jumped.
And very happy.
Yes.
And then when it's going down, he also went down. Like he was. And that he repeated that at least twice, from the lowest temperature to the highest, and then down, mm-hmm. and once again, mm-hmm. to show how fine it can make noise.
I bet the students loved it.
Yes.
It was
quite
fun.
Interesting to look at him.
But you did take your doctoral work with him.
Yes,
I mean, you wrote a thesis under his guidance.
Yes.
And what was the thesis about?
Well, that was the time when, that was during the wartime.
Yes. In 1920
Yes, I finished 20. But I started already a little earlier.
Yeah.
It was
you entered, and so it must have been 16, between
16. 16 I started.
16 and 20.
I started 16 and 20. Yes, it was just after the war, but the problems were still the same, that he wanted to make some medicinally useful things.
He did?
Yes.
I see.
And that was a line which I was specially interested
in. Yes, yes.
So I told him I would like to take such a thesis. And he told me to make artificial substituents for atropine and it was not only atropine, it was it was mainly atropine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was mainly atropine. And at this time it was still nitrogen containing part of this is the difficult one.
Mm-hmm.
It's two rings together, three rings. And at this time there was still the approach, the synthetic approach to such products was not really very well worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a suggestion to make a similar compound with one ring missing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very general method how to transform or
make variations of nature.
Modify. The molecule.
So I liked this approach.
Yeah.
And I started and it went quite all right. But the product which you get is contains three asymmetric carbon atoms,
mm-hmm.
and therefore quite many of isomers are possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when he came once to visit me, he came once a week sometime,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't like complications or something which are tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I followed your suggestion, and you can easily see the thing must give at least six different isomers. I want to separate them. So he became furious, because he didn't like such tricky things, to separate isomers. He went out immediately and didn't come for 2 weeks. And afterwards, he came again and told me that what I'm doing, so, and whether I will separate these things. I told him, yes, I told you that before. He always came and tells you the things which you suggest to him,
mm-hmm.
as if there was his idea. And it went quite well. I could separate them. It was not so difficult than he
thought. Well, did you use fraction crystallization?
Yes.
Something like that?
Some salts.
Mm-hmm.
Different salt.
Yeah.
With one salt,
yes.
You can get the one form out and
I see.
And the thing was, I think it had some activity. He never told me that.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted always to make profits with it, some patents and so.
Yeah.
I was not interested in that. But the thing was finished after 1 year, and I told him it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Oh no, that's too quick.
Too short."
And then he made some more problems, and then he was suddenly interested in coffee flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an idea how to isolate the coffee flavor. The flavor of roasted coffee.
Yes.
And told me, and then from this moment on, the other work was quite sufficient for a thesis, and I can write it and uh-huh. send it off if I would like to analyze the coffee flavor. Mm-hmm. So I was ready to do it,
mm-hmm.
and I finished the thesis and made the exam. And
that was your doctoral thesis, yes.
And it was printed.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to about this coffee flavor, and there I realized that it was a very difficult job, because it's a very bad mixture of
mm-hmm.
different things.
Mm-hmm.
Some are extremely volatile,
mm-hmm.
go away, and some are not stable.
Yes.
Deteriorate within a mm-hmm. few days,
mm-hmm.
and the sense for flavor is very delicate. If you have such a mixture and you take only one or two things out, the rest will give a very
go
unpleasant.
Flat. Oh yes, yes, oh, that's interesting.
And what I realized at this time also, that very good smells, for instance, of some flowers,
mm-hmm.
jasmine
mm-hmm.
or roses or violets, the good smell, the really good smell, is only produced by some compounds present in very small quantity, which smell awfully bad, terribly, if they are alone or
mm-hmm.
concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
But without them, the good smell is not natural. it is like a cheap coiffure shop.
Mm-hmm. Is that something like Musk, for instance?
Musk is also so.
A compound.
Musk is a special. There are different compounds mm-hmm. which have the order of Musk. There, mm-hmm. there are animal compounds and also vegetable compounds mm-hmm. from volatile oils mm-hmm. But these are big rings.
Yes, but the effect is similar if you take it away.
Yes, the musk is the pure compound. It doesn't smell bad, but it smells like musk. It must only be diluted very much.
Very good.
Otherwise, it.
So you worked on this coffee aroma,
yes, artist,
and in your own lab, you then had your own lab?
I had to arrange that with an industrial firm, because it soon became apparent that it will be very expensive.
I see.
Must find somebody with interest to pay the fee. Mm-hmm. And I could make an arrangement with a firm who was producing malt coffee.
What was the name of the firm? Do you remember that?
Yes, Katrainos Malt Café.
Oh yeah? Oh, I see.
If they were interested, they thought they could add a little of the thing to make their malt coffee smell like real coffee.
But, I see.
No, they were very, very, very pleasant people. They were interested to have it done, and we had to work through many, many tons of coffee to get only a few centimeter cube of the flavor. And
did you work on that in Zurich? You said it was
Zurich,
a German company, but
yes,
you had your own lab in Zurich then,
yes.
And they financed it. I see.
I worked for 8 years, and my last assistant, who is still coming to today, he is now over 8 years old. He started then with me.
What is his name?
Fonoy.
Oh yes, you had many publications with him, didn't you? And then you went to the ETH.
And then I went. Then came Ochitska to the ETH.
Yeah,
Staudinger left, and then came Kuhn.
Where did he go?
He went to Freiburg.
Freiburg.
And then came Richard Kuhn.
Yes.
And Richard Kuhn was quite young. I think he was 35. I can't remember more. But he was probably the youngest professor in the ETH
mm-hmm.
when he
mm-hmm.
came. He was very good, and he had an excellent lecture. And he had a very broad background. He gave once lectures for physics during 2 years. He was quite able to do it.
In addition to chemistry.
In addition to chemistry. And his chemical lectures were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
On a very different style. Staudinger gave also very good lectures.
Yes.
He was a very good lecturer.
Yes.
But on a rather primitive style.
Mm-hmm. A little flamboyant.
Yes, but it was quite good for the beginners.
Yes.
But Richard Kuhn had a very better foundation on general aspects and already on modern theories.
And then he
didn't stay long.
Yeah, when did he leave?
I can't remember the date. He stayed only about 2 or 3 years.
I see. Where did he go then?
He went to Heidelberg. At this time, Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, now Max Planck Institute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he worked mainly on vitamins at this time.
Yes.
and he was therefore on very bad terms with Professor Karrer.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because Professor Karrer had the idea that the vitamins were only his
domain.
Domain, yes.
I see. So was that? Did that influence his decision to
I
go,
or
was
so.
It just the prestige
so.
Of?
He was not.
Of the new.
He was not quite happy in Zurich.
In Zurich.
No.
Yeah.
He was a man, he liked the big style
I
of
see.
Life.
I see, yeah, he couldn't have that really here.
Not so much.
No.
He could have quite sufficient. He was not unhappy in Zurich.
Yes.
He brought about 8 very good assistants.
Mm-hmm.
I had 2 or 3 became good friends of mine.
Did they stay on?
No.
Anybody of
no,
fame? Or?
They had to search search jobs when
yes.
they were finished.
Yes, I see. Oh, Kuhn got the Nobel Prize.
Yes, Staudinger also.
Staudinger and Kuhn,
yes,
and
yes.
did he get it?
Rotitzka also.
For, yes, and you did it?
Yes,
did
Prelog also.
Right.
It was just a line.
Just a sequence, just a tradition.
And Karrer also.
Did he get it for some work done at the ETH or?
Kuhn,
yes. Or not?
He started to work. Such work cannot be done in one place. You
yes.
you start somewhere, but the yes. main thing was done, I think, already in Heidelberg. He came from Munich. He made already there. He made very good things.
I see.
He had really very good assistants.
Mm-hmm.
One of them stayed in the academic career, but the others not. Yes, 2.
Did they stay in Switzerland? What were
no,
their names?
No,
no they
the
went,
one
to,
went to America.
What was his name?
Wassermann.
Wassermann, yes.
He was first in some university in Germany, but he of Jewish origin, he mm-hmm. went to America when mm-hmm. he still could go.
I see. And then came Rutitzka. And you were assistant to Rutitzka.
Afterwards. Because I knew Rutitzka when I worked with Staudinger, because Rutitzka worked with Staudinger.
Yes, I see.
And he worked in the Souterrain. He had a very obscure cave there. And when I had time, I always went to him and looked what he's doing, because he was a very excellent experimental worker. Just the contrary from Schaudinger.
Uh-huh.
He didn't make, he had not a very poor lecturing
mm-hmm.
and very good experimental work.
Yes.
And he was working from the morning till evening always in his cellar. And once when Staudinger was away, I went down for and worked with him for two weeks to learn his methods a little.
On natural products,
yes,
I guess. That was his specialty, always.
Yes.
And then you also had a lecture.
And Rutitzka told me whether I wouldn't like to go back to
teach him. Yes, I see. Also, he asked you to come back.
Yes, he asked me, and otherwise I would never have gone.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that with him I could be free to work what I like.
Yes,
and he would always. Help me if necessary, and he also did.
So you had 2 lectures on methods and on heterocyclic chemistry?
Yes. And then afterwards was what they called physiological chemistry. physiological
I
thing.
I see, yes.
That's called today biochemistry.
Yes.
It was in a very primitive state at this time.
It was not really developed at the ETH for a long time, wasn't it? Not as a separate discipline.
It was. There was even Winterstein.
I attended some of his lectures at the ETH. On medicinal chemistry.
Yes, exactly, yes. That was called so, but it's the same. Uh-huh.
And he went then to America. He was the one who went to America, or... Or did he not?
That was his son.
Oh, that was his son, I see. And then you became assistant to Ruschitzka in 1931?
Yes.
Is that right?
Maybe.
And...
Sometime around 30, yes.
Well, from your curriculum I read that you became an assistant professor in 1934 and an associate in 1937.
That's just official titles.
And then you went to Basel.
Yes.
In.
And then I got some difficulties with Ruschitzka.
You did? The reason why you...
That was the reason.
Went to Basel?
Went to Basel. That can happen always.
I don't know if you want to tell us what the difficulties were or not.
He had always very much cooperation with industrial people.
Yes, I know
and
that.
He worked mainly on steroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And... So through his contracts with the industry, he was in a slightly queer position, because I have started to work. I wanted to start on some things which are interesting for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I started was the vitamin C.
Yes.
You see the story is given
Yes,
here.
That's the big story.
That was in 1933 when we succeeded to get the thing, and that they made Mr. Caro furious. He asked Ruschitzka why he allows some of his assistants to work on vitamins. Then he told him that he doesn't prescribe his assistants what they can work. They must choose alone. Carl couldn't do. He was in the university and they had no connections.
Yes.
But
so
he was. He could always get along with Carl, which is.
He could or he couldn't.
He could.
Yes, he could.
He knew. And he often told him quite funny things,
uh-huh.
which nobody else could tell Carlo.
I see.
But Kuhn was on extremely bad terms with Carlo.
Yeah.
So they didn't speak to each other.
Well, there was a lot of competition. All these people working in the same field.
In a very silly way.
Yes. But you managed to get the synthesis of vitamin C, and
yes.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit about
yes.
about that story.
This helped me to become a little independent.
Mm-hmm.
But when this was over, I wanted to make also other things which have medical interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I had good friends in Holland, and Dr. Tausk, who's worked through a medical man who has a very broad view on things which are necessary in medicine.
Yes.
And I spoke with him and told him that I would like to do something which is of interest for medicine, chemical work. And he said,